Two stories about Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi in the news today. Here's one headline in the Sun-Times. Kagi hits Trump Tower with big tax increase a year after slashing its taxes. The attorney representing the Trump Tower says, wait a minute. Nothing's happened in the last couple of years. But Kagi has increased the valuation and therefore the tax due. And then Crane Chicago Business has, what will it take to reform Cook County's property tax system? Albie Gallen writes, since taking office in 2018, the Cook County assessor has sharply hiked assessments on commercial properties, shifting the property tax burden away from homeowners and onto landlords and their tenants. Kagi has fulfilled a primary campaign pledge to reset commercial values, arguing that the man he defeated 4 years ago, Joseph Berrios, had lowballed them. Now he's taking fire from the real estate industry, saying he's driving away investors and undermining the city's fragile recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Mr. Kagi, welcome back. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here with the listeners.
That's a long introduction by me. Anything jump out at you that you want to say something about right away?
Well, we're really proud of the reassessment that we did in Chicago last year. It was long overdue. You know, I was elected into office in 2018, but last year was the first time that we got to reassess Chicago. And everyone has known for a long time, it's been studied to death, that the biggest buildings were tremendously undervalued by 40 to 50% according to gold standard studies. And we made sure that the values were finally in line with the market, and that is indeed going to be reducing homeowners' share of the burden when property tax bills come out at the end of the year, and we'll probably keep somewhere between $500 million to $1 billion per year in the hands of homeowners and small businesses in the neighborhoods. And I'm just sorry that it took years for us to get to the point where we could make that realignment.
Did every building in Chicago get reassessed?
Yes, we reassessed every building in Chicago. And basically, our job is to estimate the market value of buildings. And it's deceptively simple, but it goes from the skyscrapers like Trump Tower and Willis Tower all the way down to the smallest sausage stand and then everyone's homes, too. But yes, we reassess them all. And our job is to make sure that there are no distortions in the mirror to the market that we're supposed to provide. Our valuations are supposed to mirror market valuations, and we need to eliminate distortions so that we don't put burdens onto others. And under Berrios, we had a really distorted system where the biggest buildings were massively undervalued, and it put more burden on the folks in the neighborhood, small businesses and homeowners, and we're really glad that we corrected it.
How do you do that? I mean, you can't eyeball every building. Is it a computer program? Is there an algorithm? What happens?
Well, good question. So first of all, we look at a lot of market data. So when big buildings are out there buying buildings, when they're out refinancing their mortgages and borrowing, there's a lot of data that comes out into the capital markets. We also have our own field staff that's out there visiting buildings to see what the square footage is, what the dimensions are. Is this a higher quality A-class building or a C-class building? And then we get information from different market sources, pretty much every source that you can subscribe to see what rents are, what costs are. And of course, we have different conditions. Under COVID, we know that there's more vacancy in retail and in office, but there's also pretty robust conditions for data centers and warehouses. And we kept our finger on the pulse for all those things to come up with the values for them.
But I would guess, listen, I'm happy about all of this, I think. I mean, you know, more of us are homeowners than skyscraper owners. So I think if you're going to err, it probably makes sense to err on that side. But with occupancy rates what they are in the 30s downtown Chicago, I could understand that the values of those buildings would be still depressed. What do you say about that?
For sure, the office buildings in Chicago are depressed versus where they were before the pandemic. You know, I don't think anyone would argue with that. That's the same thing you'd find in New York or San Francisco. The thing is, the starting valuation point for buildings in Chicago was really artificially low during the Berrios administration. So a lot of these studies show that they were 40, 50% undervalued. If you look at the impact of COVID on office buildings in the market, just what they trade for, you might see a 20 give or take 20% hit from the impact of COVID on the value of office buildings in the market. So that's why you could see assessments going up, even though we know COVID has an impact on those office buildings. But now, it's not stopping these transactions from happening. We had a record transaction happen in Chicago this year. The Bank of America building was purchased for $1 billion. That's only the second $1 billion transaction ever for an office building in Chicago. And if you talk to people out there who are out there leasing up space in offices, it's, the conditions are actually pretty good.
But wow, we must have left a lot of money on the table. If you are saying that the valuations now are still greater than what they were pre-pandemic, then when the economy and occupancy was robust, if even now those buildings are worth more than they were then wow, were we undervaluing? Were we missing a lot of taxes from these businesses?
You're absolutely right. Just by undervaluing those buildings by 40 to 50%, like gold standard studies showed, that probably added to about $1,000 to the annual tax burden of a Chicago homeowner, which is just appalling. And that's why people intervened to make a change in this office.
Now, not to dwell on Donald Trump, because, he's such a incendiary figure, such a political figure, that you end up talking about Trump and not what I want to talk about. But let's use his building as an example. His attorney said that you have overvalued his property, that nobody's moving in. Those store spots are still vacant. So as an example, talk to us about the valuation of Trump Tower.
Sure. So let's break the Trump Tower into different pieces, because you got to remember there's the retail part, which is the subterranean area of the building. And then you have the hotel also. Now, hotel space has been hurt by the pandemic, but we valued the hotel space and the retail space in line with other spaces like it downtown. And we saw that the retail value of that space, which they are keeping vacant, but nonetheless, it has value. People who could earn an income having tenants in that space could earn income on it. And we raised the value of the retail space to $21 million. This is, downtown retail space from 12.5. And one of the reasons why is our office also used to give really excessive reductions for vacancy. And you could get your assessment reduced by up to 90% just by keeping a space vacant. And we have more stringent requirements. We have more stringent requirements. It's kind of reflects the way the market would work. If you keep a space 100% vacant, like a hotel, it does not mean it has no value anymore. Someone else would pay a price for that because they know that they could occupy it. And that's the framework that we use now when we look at folks.
Do you think businesses were doing that deliberately, either before the pandemic or during it, not, say, renting out those spaces so as to drive their cost basis down?
Well, I get a lot of criticism for the work that I do, but this is one of the areas where there's practical unanimity amongst observers across the city and the county. People who, in Lincoln Park, who live on Clark Street, but also people who live in South Shore on 71st Street, in the suburbs and north suburbs, northwest, south suburbs. There's been a perpetual perception that a lot of spaces are intentionally kept vacant in order to reduce the carrying cost, and then the investors hope to make up the difference by people having appreciation of the undervaluing land. And in the meantime, it hurts all those neighboring businesses who are staying open in good faith, getting the who need that foot traffic. And it makes us more dependent on property taxes. It hurts sales tax revenues, and it hurts employment and vitality. So we've really changed the policy on vacancy so that reflects a better market practice like our peers.
I never understood why all of those, even pre-pandemic, retail spaces along the now renovated Riverwalk, right across from very popular sites on the river, did you call it subterranean? The level along the riverfront.
Yes.
There's all of these there's all of these spots for stores and coffee shops and bars, and I guess the idea was that they would lease those out, and they have never been filled, and it looks like such a lost opportunity. And so where those spaces were valued at about $12.5 million, you've doubled them, even though they're still empty, because you say they could be making money on that. They're choosing not to. I wonder if maybe isn't a function of the name on the tower. Maybe it'll always be difficult to lease those spaces out because of how people feel about the former president.
It's quite possible, but that's a choice that they make. What we look at is what would a reasonable buyer pay for that kind of space and what kind of income could they earn to expect under reasonable assumptions and conditions. Because that's what a buyer would pay, right? And that's the framework that is generally accepted as what you should adopt when you're assessing properties, because you're assessing the value in the market for the space. And our assumptions were reasonable; they're right in line with what we'd have for similar spaces in other parts of that part of Chicago, which it is true has been hurt by all sorts of other problems that came during the pandemic, but it's an assumption that's in line with other properties in the neighborhood. So we're not singling anyone out. But if you give excessive reductions to a property owner like that who's keeping something empty, you are putting more burden on the neighboring businesses that are staying open in good faith and onto every other property owner. And so that is what we will not do.
I'm out of time today, Fritz, but I want to talk to you more about all of this down the road here pretty soon. Thanks for joining us today, and it'd be interesting to see how this all shakes out. I'm glad you were able to give us some time.
Hey, well, anytime, and happy to join your listeners and discuss this another time. Thanks for the opportunity.